What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I am Matt Tebbe, also known as Ben Hartman's hype man.
Come on.
I'm joined by Ben Hartman and Ben Sternke, also co-founders of Gravity.
Mm-hmm. Good to be here.
Yep. Good day. Good day to be with you. Good day to you both.
Good day.
One of the things we were just chatting about is waking up at 3 a.m. being anxious. That's happening around here. Mm-hmm. But also, we were talking about changing cultures. Hmm. One of the things that's we're noticing in this power series that we have done is how toxic cultures can be, or unhealthy or unhelpful cultures can be, and there maybe it's not one person responsible for it, but it's sort of a transpersonal reality, some bigger than people, made up of people. And so a lot of people come to Gravity, a lot of people come to us asking us, hey, I want to, and they say this a lot of different ways. I want to change my church from attractional to missional, or I want to change the DNA of our church, or we want to become a lot more adaptive in our structures and systems, or you know, we're this big institution and we want to sort of break it down and scatter. So people talk about culture change a lot of ways, but we wanted to just share today about some of the ways that we fail a culture change. Some of the things we've noticed that we failed personally and how other people fail. And so get out your Kleenexes. This is going to be a sad one. A real tearjerker. Yeah. No, it's really simple. These aren't the only two reasons why changing a culture or changing a church or even like a business fails or a marriage. Kids even say a marriage. But they seem to always be present, and I'll just name the two of them, and then we'll break each one down. The first is that changing a culture takes longer than we think it will, and it costs. And the second is it costs more than we think it will. So the reason we fail is we try to go too fast, and we try to make it too easy. So anyway, let's start with that first one. That culture change takes time. And if we try to do it too fast, we often will fail and get impatient and quit. Have you guys seen that? How have you seen that? And what occurs to you as I say that?
Buddy, that's the story of a lot of my ministry life. So I do the fivefold stuff, I'm kind of apostle off the charts. And so for me, when I was younger and in ministry, everything was kind of this driving ambition to get things done and get them done quickly. Like I had to make my mark, you know? And so that led to all kinds of personal dysfunctions, cultural dysfunctions, challenges, not discernment of long obedience in the same direction, me mm-hmm. kind of pulling certain levers of control and manipulation and trying mm-hmm. to get my way and playing backdoor politics and all those kinds of fun things that always happen in the church. I think the older I get, the more I am satisfied by the fact that there is a group of people that I've been called to shepherd, and I'm going to marry them and bury them, and I'm going to be around for a long time, and we're going to just simply discern what God's doing in our midst together. And it does, when our posture changes in that, I think for me, it's led to a lot less leadership anxiety. I don't feel attention to, I have to get things done or I have to accomplish things. And this doesn't mean we go passive on our like strategic planning or we don't have any kind of goals or vision or direction that we're heading in. Right. It just means that there's not as much at stake for me, in all of those things.
Yeah.
And so what I'm learning for me is as a leader, I've had to really step back from what are my motivations? What am I striving for? Why am I striving for those things? And, pace equals empathy. So are we traveling at a pace that is empathetic to the people that I'm leading and walking mm-hmm. with them?
Yeah. I relate to that too, Ben, just in the sense that, I think part of the way I'm wired up is to like, I tend to look at ministry as like my accomplishments in ministry are tied to my identity a bit too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that's some of the impetus behind trying to go too fast is basically like, there's a lot, like you said, there's a lot at stake in terms of my identity. Like, am I a good pastor? Am I really making an impact? You know, all of those questions, those anxiety-ridden questions are there. And if I'm unreflective about that stuff, I can tend to try to push a culture, you know, like push the people I'm leading.
Yep.
Rather than, and kind of treat them as, less than persons, right? Where you're trying to push on them in order to get them to do something because I need you to change so that this culture can change so I can feel good about my ministry, you know, rather than.
Yeah. So I have better stories to tell to my ministry friends. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I have something to say on my podcast.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but rather than this mutuality, like a sense of like, I can be a change agent here, but that has to be in sort of dialogue with what's happening here on the ground. And it always has to be a recognition that I am in dialogue with persons, that I have to respect their agency. And if they don't want to change, I have to like let them be where they're going to be.
Yep.
I can maybe make a different decision after that, but I can't push them or manipulate them or cajole them into it. I can just cast vision and invite, that kind of thing.
So, and everything in our culture pushes up against this, right? So we just live in a quick fix culture where everything is downloadable and accessible and it's right there for us.
Yeah.
And so we have this belief that church growth should be the same, that the way our culture mechanical. Change happens should be overnight, it's all technical, right? If I do these three things, if I press these three buttons, then I'll get this result. And I've just found that to be blatantly false in pretty much every way.
Yeah, there's a cultural or a modern fetish with efficiency. So the quickest way to a destination is the best way. So efficiency has the inherent, like a truth that's not even questioned, that the quickest way is also the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the
result is the objective.
Yes, and the result is the objective, right? So the way itself isn't important other than it being the most efficient.
Right, yeah. The way, and it's... it's sort of inversely proportionate. I mean, it's inversely important in the sense that the quickest way is the best. So you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like the way doesn't really matter. the destination matters, the objective matters, the goal matters.
Yeah. And so then this trying to shift too fast, I think a couple of things happen. One is we end up as someone who's responsible for the culture, whether it's my family, my marriage, my church, even my office, we end up trying to change the culture without changing ourselves. So we don't, you know, one of our axioms is what God's going to do through you, he's also going to do in you. This comes from a thought that I think we were introduced to from Dallas Willard, who said, what God gets out of me isn't what I accomplish or produce, but it's the person I become.
Mm-hmm.
And change always starts with me. If I want to change the culture I'm in, if I want to change my marriage, if I want to change my kids, if I want to change the office, I don't focus on my kids or focus on my wife. I focus on me in those relationships. Mm-hmm. And that takes a long time. Like it takes a while to change, right? Sometimes it takes years or months or months. So I think it's we need to start personally rather than just try to change things externally.
Yeah.
And then I think also too, if we try to do things quickly, we end up sacrificing people at the altar of outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not,
yes.
We don't focus pastorally on, hey, there's people, there are people at our church, or there are people at our, let's just talk about churches. There are people at our church because they like things the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear from them. We don't get emails from them. They're not coming up to us after the sermon, arguing with us every week. But there, a majority of people, they have signed the unwritten contract we've made with them that the current culture is what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And changing that is breaking that contract. It's breaking that agreement. And it can be really hard on them.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody experienced, psychologically, everybody experiences change as loss. And so what our brains tend to focus on when something changes is, what am I losing? And so change is really, really hard for people.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think we've been trained in the wrong way. Like we've been trained almost that culture change happens outside of relationship, right? That culture change can happen by policy statements. If I would create the right policies, if I preach the right sermon series, if we create this program and do these five technical things, then our culture is going to shift.
Yeah.
And I do think there's some value. Like, one of the culture changes we've built into our church is every 6 weeks we do a 24 hours of prayer, where our church, just every 6 weeks, we stop and we take 24 hours. We open up the church. Mm-hmm. We have space in the church for people to pray, like stations throughout the area. And for a full 24 hours, we're just praying and fasting for our community, for the church, for God's discernment, for him to speak, for us to hear from him, all those kinds of things. Yeah. So there's some power in creating programs that create culture, but doing that outside of relationship doesn't really accomplish anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm assuming you did more than just schedule it. You know what I mean? Like, that was than just like Ben Hardman getting up on a Sunday morning. Right. Guys, we are going to do every 6 weeks, and then just people show up and pray, right?
I declare bankruptcy!
Right. So there was some relationship, there was some vision, there was some discernment about how you came to this new structure, which is, hey, every 6 weeks we pray and fast for 24 hours.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so is what you're saying, Ben, like, it has to be more than just a rebranding. We're not just changing language and logos and like messaging.
Or even like a theology statement. Like, now we used to believe this, now we believe this.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be truthful, like, this is why I can't go to Christian conferences anymore.
This is a safe space, Ben. Let it out.
That's kind of... Sorry. we might be going a little too deep here. But that's all you get is, like, you know, here's five ways to grow your church. Here's five, you know, tactics or tips or techniques that you can adapt. And I just get worn out with that stuff.
Yeah.
I would much rather be trained in how to relationally change the culture, or how to wait on the kingdom, or how to discern how God is at work and join him there, than I would, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Here's five programs you need to start. Here's a better way to have a parking team. Here's a tighter pair of skinny jeans for your worship pastor.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things just wear me out.
Yeah. So the first peril then of culture change is that we try to go too fast, and we don't do the personal work that needs to happen as our as an agent in that culture, and we aren't pastoral, meaning we don't understand that the culture is made up of persons, not just brands, logos, messages, and tactics.
I think that gets into your second thing too, where you said like it's too costly, because the personal. I think we should tease that apart a little bit too, because that may be new. That may be a new thought for a lot of people. That I think the assumption a lot of us make. I know I did just reflexively, unreflectingly, I made this assumption that if I'm going to go and change the culture, it means that the culture is deficient. Number one, right. Number two, I can see what's wrong about it by myself, you know, as the change agent. Number three, I know what to do about it, right? Just me. I know what to do about it. And number four, that what's going to be changing is just the culture and not me.
Other people.
Other people are going to change.
Policies.
Yeah. And and I know what to do, and I'm just going to, I'm like an implementer executor rather than a part of the culture.
Yeah.
And we get this some of this stuff from adaptive change theory, which is basically like the most transformed person in any culture is always the leader.
Yep.
The most transformed person is the leader, which is, it's not very intuitive for a lot of people.
Yeah, I remember being a young pastor, and there was a family that had a child, a teenage child, that was a, quote, wild child. Mm-hmm. Completely off the rails, completely wouldn't listen to them, a rebellious, breaking its authority. And I kept getting all this information from the parents. Okay, tell me what he's doing. Tell me, give me his behaviors. Give me like what you've tried in the past, blah, 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 blah. And I kind of come into this meeting. It's me and two other pastors. One of the pastors is 20 years older than me. To sort of like, and this kid has agreed to meet. And I'm thinking, okay, how do I change this kid in this meeting for these parents? And I'll never forget. Before I can say anything, praise
scared
God.
Scared straight, bring in some ex-cons.
Yeah, I wore some really tight workout shorts, you know, was flexing my quads. No, before I could do anything, the older pastor in the room began counseling the parents. And I was like, why are you wasting time? This kid who never listens, who's always on the streets, this is our shot. This is our chance. And about 30 minutes into the meeting, this older pastor said, the only way to change your son, he says this to the parents, the only way to change your son is to change yourself. And he said, I would go so far as to say that the problem that your son is having is as much you as it is him.
Wow. And that's when you brought in the ex-cons?
And then, and I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's offensive. You're wrong. And that can go either way in that moment, right? Like you could, but the parents just started breaking down, broke down in tears, and were reckoning with some really jacked up patterns that contributed to their son's choices. Now, they weren't totally responsible, but it opened up this beautiful space to say, it's easy to identify a problem, like a problem child, and say, we got to fix that problem,
right?
Because that doesn't cost me anything. I don't have to change.
I've got a change of strategy or a different tactic.
Right.
Yeah.
But what happens if you want like that family for that culture to change, the parents had to change.
Yes.
The parents had to change. And it cost them a great deal to do it.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's a good example of that kind of dynamic. And that's why I say I think that's part of the cost. You said the two things are we try to go too fast.
Yep.
And the second thing is it ends up feeling like it costs too much. And I think that's part of the cost, right? Part of the cost is I have to go into this realizing that for me as a leader who wants change, I have to be willing to change. Mm-hmm. I have to be willing to assume that I'm part of this problem, if you want to call it that, right?
Yeah.
But I actually have to be open to God's transforming work in my own life and my own patterns of leadership, to be confronted by, you know, like what's the Lord saying to me?
Yep. So the cost can be personal cost.
Right. Yeah. It can be a personal cost.
Yeah. And living in what's really happening, right? So for me as an apostle, it's so easy for me to live in the future version of the culture change that's already happened, without radically accepting what really is.
Right.
And without naming really going on. And so,
Wow, that's good.
Naming what's really happening and being present there, not taking people where I want them to be and pastoring them there, pastoring them where they actually are right now. Mm.
It's like aspirational leadership. Like, I'm going to lead as if you were in a different place, and hopefully you get there.
No, we do that all the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a church in our head, right? We've got an idealized thing, and we can either live in fantasy land where it's like, everything's great because this is the church in my head, or just frustration where we're like, why aren't you guys conforming to the image I have of you in my head?
Yep.
Yeah, so acceptance of reality. Yeah. That's part
it's
of the
like,
cost.
It's like the worship leader that's leading worship for 10 people, but treating it like it's a concert for 7,000 people. like be where you are, right?
I've been to that church.
I've been to that church many times.
Yeah. Yeah. So it costs, it'll cost us. It'll also cost our people. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of dissatisfied churchgoers, but by and large, people are at the church they're at because they want the church the way it is. And some of us struggle with, I can't make anyone unhappy. I can't disappoint or let anyone down. And if I make these changes, if we do this, then people will stop being pleased with me. People will stop affirming us. People will disagree with this. And I have to keep things copacetic. I have to keep people happy. Mm. So it costs too much to change because I will lose the thing that I'm really needing, which is keeping people happy.
Yeah, which that's the other side of the coin of the thing that Ben and I mentioned earlier, right? Where the thing that will sort of give me the identity that I want is if this culture changes, right? So there's this ambition to kind of make something happen, because I need it in this unhealthy way.
Yeah.
Or there's this impulse to keep everybody happy, and so no change happens. But they're both rooted in the same kind of like misalignment of our identity. My identity is either in look at what I've accomplished, or it's in everybody likes me, you know, so much.
Yeah.
So it's like two sides of the same coin there.
So you see like a never shake the boat mentality. Like I just can't, I can't rock the boat. I can't do anything. Or I'm burning it down.
We're burning the ships.
We're just gonna, I don't care what anybody says. We're changing and this is how we're going, and get on, you know, get on the bus or get off the bus.
Right.
I've actually heard that said in staff meetings before.
Yep. Get on. That's straight. Yep.
I've heard shape that said too.
Shape up or ship out.
Yeah.
You're just a tool in my toolbox.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway.
I'm triggered.
Yeah. No, but you were talking about we can't... sometimes the hindrance, the cost for us is people might be upset with me. People might leave the church. They might not want to go on this journey.
I've never seen a church successfully change culture and not lose a boatload of people.
Yeah.
It just, I don't think it can happen. Mm-hmm. And if you think you've changed the culture of church without losing people, you may have just rebranded what you've always done with new language.
Right. And everybody's like, okay, that's fine. It used to be red. Now it's green. We don't mind. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I run into this too. People talk about culture change, and what they really mean is we're going to call what we do something different.
Yeah. Or we're going to modernize our logo and it's going to be, you know, our website's going to look a little cleaner.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
New website.
Yeah.
We changed the culture. We got a new website.
Yeah. Look at that. We're modern now.
So culture change is slow and costly. Mm. And for Americans, those are like, we hate those things.
Yeah. Why would we want to do that?
I don't know.
Ugh.
I mean, I like things fast and cheap, which is why I use Amazon, even though I don't think it's a very good company. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They oppress their workers, and yet I order things from them.
Right. I'm feeling conviction about that right now as I talk about it. But yeah, it's fast and cheap, which is why everybody uses Amazon.
Right.
Right? But so we're conditioned as Americans, as good American consumers, to value and orient ourselves around things that are quick and easy. Mm-hmm. And
And if it's not quick and easy, I think it's worth reflecting on that. Like, our cultural just knee-jerk reaction is like, something's wrong.
If it's not quick, something's wrong. If it's not easy, something's wrong.
Right, right. Like, make this stop. Make this terrible thing stop. So I think like we go into culture change that same way, where like we wake up and we have to just remind ourselves, like, because our bodies are going to be reacting to it as if it's a terrible thing that must stop.
Yeah.
You know? It's really hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. And the whole kind of free agency nature of pastoring where, oh, I spent a couple of years here. These people just aren't getting it. I got to go somewhere else now becomes the mantra. And so we just don't stay long enough for real transformation to take place because the grass always seems greener somewhere else. There's always just these other options. There's a different city, a different place. And, you know, for me to actually stay in a place that's not transforming or changing as quickly or rapidly as I want it to change means I have to actually be really self-reflective as well as patient.
Yeah.
And we just don't have space for that in our culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of discernment that has to take place there too, you know, because I mean, I do think there is such a thing as, you know, brushing the dust off your feet. You know, Jesus tells his disciples to do that. But, you know, there's also such a thing as leaving too quick, leaving too early. You know, and there is such a thing as perseverance, long obedience in the same direction, but there also is such a thing as, you know, like you're stuck, you know, you're the reason you're comfortable here is that you haven't actually called people into what God's asked you to.
And so what you're describing is culture change is impossible without wisdom, without a process of discernment, listening, sifting, testing. And so I didn't intend.
It's not a process out of the box.
No, it's not a principle that you just. It's not an equation.
Right.
It's not a quadratic equation.
It's not mechanical.
No. And so this is what we do with our Gravity Leadership Academy. We give you the operational intelligence about how to build cultures of wisdom and discernment and listening. And we start with you, so that you become oriented and guided by sort of a knowing how to live in wisdom and love, and then train other people to do that with you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We had our discipleship group locally last night, and we were talking about our experience of accountability in Christian circles.
Yeah.
And one of the people who comes to our church and has been a part of this group now for 2 years, he doesn't talk much, but he just shared, he's like, I think we are doing things intentionally too slow.
Slower than I normally do my whole life. And he was like, I think you guys are doing this intentionally.
Yeah.
Like the conversation is slow here.
He's like, he's like, instead of like wrapping things up, moving things forward, he's like, there's tons of silences. You ask probably one too many questions.
Yeah.
You wait like 1 week too long for things, or, you know, like he's intimating that we're sort of pushing against this fast achieving sort of.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Here we go. Next thing. Yeah.
And his reflection was, I think this has been really good for me.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing that, like, I didn't sit down and have a strategy meeting and say, hey, let's intentionally lead this discipleship group to make, you know, Mike really ticked off that we're going so slow.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
No.
But I think what's happened is that we've been involved in leading our cohorts and doing that kind of rhythm, that there's this deep wisdom happening that's greater than what we're contributing.
Right. It's not like a strategy where we're like, hey, after you ask a question and after the person gets done answering it, wait 3 seconds before you ask another question, just in case there's more. Like, it wasn't a top-down kind of a strategic conscious thought, but it is like, as we've learned that waiting a few moments oftentimes brings out like the best thing. Like, just give somebody time to think for a second.
Just shut your yapper.
Yeah. And let them like think of the next thing that comes to mind.
Inhale,
like,
and exhale.
Yeah. Like, anyway, so it was a fascinating comment from him.
I think it touches on what we do and why we're passionate about it. Because we're talking about this because we've made all these mistakes. We've tried to go too fast. We've tried to make it too easy, and it has failed. And instead of like doing the same thing over and over, which is crazy making, we've just committed to figuring out what are we missing that was inherent in the ministry of Jesus and the early church, and what did they understand that we're missing? And so, if that interests you, reach out. Let us know. Shoot us an email at podcast@gravityleadership.com. And I'd love to just chat with you about how I think our cohorts create the capacity and the character and the competency to do the things we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not perfectly, but better than anything else I've ever done.
Yeah. And that's for, I mean, culture change of any kind.
Yeah, including your own culture.
Yeah, including it, like the people you live with, your family, your spouse and kids, and that kind of thing. So it's been really helpful.
Yeah.
Hey, well, can we just? I'm just thinking of the person who has been waiting in the deep end of this for a long time, who has been for 10 or 15 years trudging up at changing a culture and doing the hard work and working through this. What would your guys' advice be to that person who has, I have stayed and it's hard and I keep, you know, I feel like this is where God wants me, but we're just not getting the traction that I feel like we should be getting, or just not seeing the growth that we want to get. Because I actually believe that a lot of those people are the heroes of our faith that we don't celebrate and don't know how to celebrate. So just to wrap us up, maybe just final thoughts for that person. What's your advice, guys?
The thing that comes to mind for me is that it's really difficult to know how to give advice generally because of the dynamic we talked about. You know what I mean? That there's a wisdom that gets born out over time. So, I mean, if you are confident that the Lord has called you to this place, and that's not a question in your mind, I guess, I would say one of the things that's been helpful for me is to remember that I don't necessarily see all the fruit. All the fruit that God is doing through my ministry is not necessarily obvious to me. And so there's a trust oftentimes that I have to lean into, that if I am being faithful to what God's called me to do, that He's responsible for the fruit. And I may not understand or see what's happening ever, you know what I mean? Like until heaven, you know, and maybe then we find out, you know, what all the ripple effects of a ministry, you know, along obedience in the same direction. So that's one thing I'd say. You don't always know what's happening.
Yeah, and I'd say too, even Jesus decided he'd rather change the world with 12, like B-minus friends. than by himself in an A-plus way, right? Yeah. And so like Jesus spent a lot of time investing in and creating a community of people that could inhabit and embody his kingdom project, not only with him, but more importantly, after he was gone. Mm. And so I'd say if you're in this, you've got to find a Peter, James, and John. You got to find, ideally in your community, but this is how Gravity functions for a lot of people. Like we're just sort of like brothers in arms and sisters in arms with each other, because some of this work, Ben, you're talking about, you know, nobody else in my denomination is talking about these things. Nobody else really gets what I'm coming from. I feel like I'm, you know, every other day I feel like, am I even a Christian? Like, because I keep bouncing off my thoughts to other people and they look at me like I have two heads. You've got to do this with people, and you've got to have a community of people that can bear this with you, because it can be isolating, lonely work.
Yeah. That's part of the cost, oftentimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it does feel lonely.
What would you say, Harmon?
Yeah, I would just say that there is transformation probably that's happening in you also that you're not recognizing. I think sometimes, I think there's been seasons of ministry for me, and I'm not so sure it blessed anybody or did anything for anybody else. But I think what God did in the life of the Hardmans in that space was worth what happened there. And so recognizing that God is always present at work, even in your disappointments, even when there isn't fruit, even when it feels like you're pushing a ball up the hill and it's just way too heavy.
Yeah.
There's something happening in you that makes it worth it. So nothing's wasted. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good word. Nothing's ever wasted. Nothing's ever wasted.
Yep.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think too, like you look at, you mentioned, you know, the ministry of Jesus, and in his humanity, I do think there, you know, you look at his anguish in the garden, and on the cross, and you know, from the outward facing world, like even his disciples thought, well, this is, you know, that was a nice dream. Like, it didn't look like it ended real successfully for Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, and even after the resurrection, Jesus doesn't go around like, wagging his finger at everybody who, you know, crucified him or anything. He just, he goes around to witnesses, and then the church slowly grows over a few hundred years. Like, it just takes some time, and you don't always know the fruit of the seeds you're sowing.
Yes.
You look at the ministry of Paul. I mean, that dude was like, that didn't seem like a great ministry. You know what I mean? Like, he's got these tiny little churches all over the Roman Empire, but
Corinthians out of their minds.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Timothy
behaving crazy in crazy ways. You
Timothy
know I mean?
Letting busybodies take over the church in Ephesus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's and that's the foundation of the whole thing that we have now.
John
the
Mark
church.
And Barnabas.
Right. Yeah. There's this argument. Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
I think
well,
just good to remind ourselves of that kind of thing. It wasn't all up and to the right for the church, but God was doing something in the midst of it.
Yes. Friends, may you trust that nothing is wasted. That God's faithfulness is exceedingly more than your faithfulness, that he is birthing in you and incubating in you a deep love and compassion and wisdom for his people, that the gates of hell will not prevail against his church and the part of his church that you are a part of. So go, friends, learning to count the cost, learning to lay down your life, learning to eschew the quick and easy for the long and difficult. And may you experience the resurrection of Jesus right in that. Go in peace, friends.
Amen.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media, too. And we would love to hear from you, so please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.